Hey, everybody.
Morning.
How are you guys
Happy New
doing?
Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, everyone.
Welcome back. Sorry for a little delay here, computer problems.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, everyone.
Hey, so we're going to jump in. We're going to start with my good friend David here. David, I'm just calling up your restructuring PDF, and I had looked through it before. I was looking for the RACI chart in particular, and we'll dive into that. So just a few things here that I like about what you did, and I'm going to share the screen. All right. Start share. There we go. Just so people can have a sense. So a lot of what you did here was you built roles based on the module 4 that talks about roles and responsibilities and accountabilities and all that. And one of the things that I like to do is I like to keep things simple at the start until things need to get more complicated. So I think you've done a really good job of keeping things pretty simple and easy to digest and understand. And so the two main ways you define a role are what is your purpose and what are the accountabilities? And another thing that you deal with roles is you can create 5 roles that one person occupies. So that way roles are sort of smaller objects that you can put in baskets that are called people. And you can remove roles from others and move them to others more easily rather than changing job descriptions, losing clarity, all that kind of stuff. And so those roles then are a little bit easier to navigate most times. So you have kind of operations director, technical director, finance, HR. This is great. So you get down to the very end here. And this is your RACI chart. And so I just wanted to, you had said one of your things you noticed is there weren't very many A's. And so that can mean a lot of things. But for those who don't know the RACI chart, I'm going to quickly review it. This is a way that you organize power and accountability in a system. And RACI just stands for Responsible, Approved, Consult, and Inform. RACI, R-A-C-I. And the definitions here are anybody who gets an R is responsible for initiating the action. So anybody gets an A is the one who has the final approval or authority over the action that was taken. And the distinction between those two, A and R, is that you could have an administrative assistant booking travel for the CEO. She would get an R, but the CEO gets the A on which flight she wants to take. So that gives you like a little bit of a context for how A and R show up. C is no action can be taken unless they are consulted first. And I is you are informed after the action is taken. And so when you have complex different accountabilities and big projects that have to be seen through in a certain way, a RACI chart can provide a lot of clarity about who has what power and authority and what we can expect of each other in terms of how we should behave. So hopefully that gives you a little bit of context. Comments or questions about the RACI chart in general before we jump into Dave's specific questions. All right, awesome. Okay, Dave, let's talk about this for a minute. We're not going to go in like deep detail on all this stuff. There's a ton of stuff here. You may not need to do all of this. That's the other thing about a RACI chart is sometimes people will over-engineer all the things that need to be done, but I think you're doing pretty good. This looks pretty good right now. So walk me through your thinking, your areas of concern or questions. So for example, I see something here, perform site inspection and submit completed site task. And you have 2 informs, 1 person is responsible, and no A anywhere. So an A just means that a person can do that task without having to consult anybody and they're expected to complete it. And so they, in my mind, they would get both the A and the R.
That pretty much, you know, answers the question of it. And I started with it, but then I was like, all right, maybe before I like dial that in, the person can be responsible and also have the, you know, autonomy to have the final approval. Yeah. All right. Well, that's a lot of these activities, because these are not, this is like a more of like a workflow, but just to make sure that, like, when things run into the, you know, maybe something stuck in a certain area, you know, where and why and how, and like we can get out of it. And also to just show people, like, this is your role in the process when we're doing, you know, executing a sale and initiating order fulfillment and then going into, you know, the delivery of the product.
Okay, awesome. So make sure that there's an A on every single line item. If there's no A, it means no one's truly accountable. And that's
so you can actually like interchange approval and accountability.
In a way, yeah, you can. That's right. That's probably right. And the reason is because that's how you balance authority and accountability. Remember, that's one of the things that creates stress in organizations, is when I'm accountable for something that I don't have power to do. I don't have the authority to do. So the A gives you both the accountability and the authority at the same time.
Right.
And you don't need to probably number the consults. Doesn't matter if there's 1, 2, 3, just remove the number to keep it simple for people who are going to review this.
One of the reasons I put the number in there is, again, this is a lot about protecting, like creating those layers. So, you know, basically showing the sales rep, like, you first would consult the director, then you the sales director, then you, if the sales director is not available or can't answer your question, then it goes to the technical director, and if there's still a snag, then you escalate to that third tier.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Great, that works.
Yeah,
awesome. Okay, good. Well, I mean, it looks good otherwise. I mean, I think it's great. Do you have other questions, anything else you want to talk about on that?
No, you answered my question about kosher to put the R and the A in the same person. And then, this was pretty much helpful. I do have a question about the org chart, and, you know, I've been doing that kind of setting the stage, or like, you know, staging the ascent. You know, a lot of people are excited about this, and, you know, I've even like kind of given them like little teasers of, hey, this is going to be like, you know, cause again, we're 30-person company, no real formal job title. So this is like the first time we're, you know, cresting this hill of, you know, oh, I actually have like a, you know, some upward mobility here.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
When you're talking about these roles, do you currently have them kind of structured as one person per role, or do you have?
I do. Yeah.
Okay. So just know that one way to create flexibility for you is to, and it's not necessary you do now, but I just want you to know, in terms of being creative and thinking through things, you have the option of taking each of these roles and breaking them into smaller roles. So they're like Legos, and then you can kind of build whatever you want for each person as it needs to unfold. Now, that may not be necessary at this level of complexity, but I just want you to kind of flag that for you. That if one of these roles you're like, boy, I really like this, but I feel like this other person would do this better, this aspect of this role better, you can break that out as a separate role and give it to someone else and just say, hey, roles are, your job description is merely a collection of roles. And right now you have a single role, or right now you have 10 roles. You know, you can have, I remember in one organization I was working with, somebody could have up to 10 roles. But those roles weren't full-time FTEs. You know, they were tasks, elements, accountabilities, responsibilities, a purpose that existed in the organization to achieve some end. And then at one point somebody got hired and it was clear they were way better. And so we just moved two of the roles over to that person without really impacting bandwidth, pay scale, authority, job title, all that kind of stuff.
That's helpful to know that, like, I could even, you know, continue to break these out, and
absolutely. So it's worth, that's why it's worth starting agnostically, not thinking about the people, but just thinking about what is something that needs to happen and what is the purpose of that thing. And if that thing were to be happening, what would they be accountable for? And it could only be two things you're accountable for. It doesn't have to be a long list of things. And the purpose can be really, really simple. You know, take out the trash is the purpose. So keep the garbage clean. And the accountabilities are to take the trash out once a week. Great. And bring the bins back inside. That's the second bullet point. There's a role, and somebody's going to occupy that role at some point in life. And you might say, hey, for a period of time, this person is totally overwhelmed and slammed because of the crisis. We're going to take the trash, take her outer role, and put it over here with this person for about 2 weeks or a month or 3 months or whatever.
And so it sounds like,
they have like a piece of paper that says, this is your new accountability. Here it is. It can just be how it's just another way to kind of navigate complexity and give you flexibility.
Got it. So, but it does sound like going to the minutia level with this is important. So that way you can, you know, like you said, as Legos assign this person this role and this person that role and it, or this person these six roles, you know, that's just there, so you know that every activity that needs to happen in the company is like paying the bills or like, you know, bringing the mail back from like the front counter to where it needs to land.
So and again, I wouldn't overwrite these things. I wouldn't try to over anticipate everything and try to describe everything within an inch of its life. I would focus on areas where you think things aren't really happening, where there's lack of
clarity. Yeah, focus on the problem, right?
What I'm supposed to achieve or get done. Focus there. You do not want these roles to be overwritten. And again, this is iterative, right? So after you've done a version, you might go, actually, that doesn't work at all. We need to rethink the way we're doing that. And that's fine. I'm just giving you different ways to think about things to keep it simple and allow for adaptability and flexibility.
Awesome.
Tom, I see your hand there.
Yeah, would this be also an effective way to build career paths and development and growth objectives by, you know, putting these, okay, here's your foundational Lego blocks, and this is your next responsibility or role for the next year. You know, do these competently. We can add more Legos on top of it.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and you can do that in a way. What it does is instead of going, well, you're going to go from manager to director, you might feel the person isn't ready for director, but you want to get them ready for it. And so you're going to tell them, hey, you're headed for this level. That's the title we want to give you. To get to that level, you're going to need to adopt seven more roles, you know, or one really big role. You're going to need to adopt this new role. That's going to layer on you when you get to the director level. In order to get you to that one big role, we're going to give you three smaller ones to start. And here they are. And you show them, here are your three roles. Here are your new accountabilities. Here's the purpose of those roles. Why don't you take those on for a while? And then, by the way, this is what the role looks like when you are a director. We feel you're not ready for that yet for these reasons. We think these roles are going to get you ready for that. So absolutely, this can be used that way.
And vice versa, can it be used as an organization grows, where you start to separate them as absolutely. The need for multiple people comes?
That's exactly right. So what you start to realize is roles become too big. And you go, okay, this person can't maintain this many roles. That has to be broken in. So and it just makes it easy to do org design, because you go, what is the purpose? That helps me just start clarify, okay, what is it we're trying to achieve here? And then what are those accountabilities? And you go, look, three of those accountabilities are way too big. So we're going to remove those accountabilities. We're going to change the name of this role, and we're going to change the name of that role. And because you're changing role names, it's not hurting people's titles. It's not hurting their job description. You know, it's impersonal. And the more you treat roles as impersonal, the more adaptable team members become. They become less sort of attached to the fiefdom that they own. And you can kind of go, hey, I got a stack of 10 roles. I got five people. I need to distribute these roles among you for a while. And then you go, okay, good. Let's trade those out. Let's do that. And so that's how. There's lots of ways this can get used.
Yeah, that's helpful. I like the idea of the career track. And then also, like, this is also partly why we're doing this, is we've gotten beyond the point where like the warehouse manager can do all of the ordering, all of the like tagging and checking stuff. And like, that's why he has like two guys working with him now. And same thing with, sales staff. Like, we have this another role in here for CSR. Like, we used to just think that one CSR could handle all of our inbound leads, but then as we grow, it's the quality goes down. So that's why you need to spread it out.
Yep. And it could be that you have five duplicates of the same role, depending on the kind of organization you're in and the needs you have, you know. So you're like, there are five people that occupy this same role. and they right. do the same thing. They're accountable for the same thing.
Right. That makes sense.
So right now you have these titled much more as job descriptions rather than roles.
For sure. Yeah. I think I need to take another stab. And,
fine. Right. It's okay as a first iteration. And I don't think I was going to be worked up about it. The other thing I wanted to show you, let me just see if I can find it. Here we go. Let me share this with you. Okay, so this is in the program. Hold on a sec. And I'm sure you saw this, but I just want to highlight it. My goodness, why am I having a hard time navigating today? New year. Okay, so here it is. So this is an example of like roles. So at one time I was the chief leadership officer of a company, and that made for a very confusing job title that people didn't know what I was doing. And so there was lots of overlap and different things. I used the very tool I'm using to effectively do this in the system. And this was a collection of my roles back in 2015. So like the reporting, I report to the CEO. I was the vision and value steward. Here's my purpose. Here's my accountabilities. You know, pretty small. That's just one. I was also an executive coach. Here's what that one is. I was also a human development architect. I was also a human development trainer. I was also ELT, Executive Leadership Team 360 researcher. I was a brand architect. I was a culture curator. I was an executive recruiter. I was a strategic planner and communicator. I was an exit planner. So you have all these different roles, but any one of those could be lifted out of my job and given to somebody else with a lot of clarity. So at any time, I don't have time to do the training anymore. So I'm going to just focus on architecting the curriculum, but somebody else is going to go do training. And here's what training involves. We have these specific things to deliver and develop these training modules for human development. So that just gives you a sense for like any one of these could be interchanged, but the title was Chief Leadership Officer. So big, vague, meaningless title that made my ego feel good. And then a whole bunch of actual tactical things that I had to do in the system. So it's one way, again, you guys don't have to do this, but it's a way for you to think about roles and give you more flexibility when you separate job title from role descriptions. Those are two different things. Because people get very attached to their job title. I mean, if you tried to take that chief leadership officer away from me, there'd be snot and tears, and I'd be pounding my fists, and I'd be super upset and angry. But if you take away human development trainer and exit planner, I'm okay because I still have my coveted chief leadership officer to keep me warm at night. I say that in jest, but you all know that feeling of people who really attach to titles, and it means a lot to them. Not everybody's like that, but some people are.
It seems like this would be a good exercise too, Shane, from a succession planning standpoint.
For sure.
Or delegation or so forth. Yeah. That's
very powerful. Part of the reason it's helpful in succession planning is you may realize that you've got a wildly talented person in four of those roles and they'd be abysmal in six other roles. And you weight those roles and you're like, actually, that's really great. We're going to have them do that. But then we're going to need to allocate those roles over here to this person. And that lives better here. And, you know, so it for sure, it gives you more flexibility in succession planning because, you know, one CEO could be highly philosophical and reflective. And another CEO might be far more engaged in storytelling and marketing and cares a lot about that and has skills in that. And so you'd have to redefine the kind of CEO you might have based on either the needs of the organization or who you think will take that on. So those are the kinds of things you can play with in succession planning for sure. Good. Okay, who else? Who's up? Who else has more they want to talk about?
I have a question. It's so broad. as the new year runs around, right, and my organization is relatively small, but I would like to start a program with my senior team of like pushing ourselves to grow, pushing ourselves to think, pushing ourselves to communicate better, pushing ourselves to be better. And I was just hoping that, you know, perhaps this is a venue. And by the way, everybody now has your book, but is there a way to construct within the confines here, and maybe this isn't an appropriate place to do it, a program that I could start managing internally to increase the awareness and the
efficacy.
Thank you.
It's a hard one.
I know where I need to work. Yeah.
Efficacy
of the team. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you're talking about like leadership development, professional development, that kind of thing?
Yeah. So the answer is yes, but it's also just, it's accountability and monitoring. It's management. Yeah. It's partially leadership, but it's partially just, are we doing this the best that we can? Are we monitoring it the right way? Are we focusing on things that need to get done? Are we all of those things, right? And when it was a smaller company, I could just do it, you know, on my own. But now I kind of feel like I need to teach everyone to fish. And so my job is to, you know, help everyone else kind of grow.
Okay. So give me a concrete example of something that you think, feel like maybe isn't working as good as it could, so that I know how to tailor my feedback.
I think that we are, the one thing that sticks out in my mind is, right, we're also busy doing our jobs every day. Nobody's really planning, right? Nobody's going, okay, nobody's prioritizing and going, this is what needs to happen today. This is what needs to happen next week, right? And then B, it's a communication, right? Like, right, because we're all accountable to each other. Right. So we all work as a team, but yet everyone has to go away at the end of our 9:30 meeting every morning and do their own job. And so, you know, we all need to be more thoughtful about what's about prioritizing. And then we all need to be more thoughtful about communicating with each other. This is where I think our priorities are. And then managing those priorities. Are we... I don't know if this is accountable enough, if this is quantifiable enough for you.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Wait, now that when you say you need help with management, that's exactly right. That's management. So I'm going to give you a couple of things that I'm going to recommend. Let's see. So happens they exist in the program that you have enrolled in. The good news, Module 4, double productivity and impact. So, you know, a lot of what we talked about at the beginning of this was actually what David's building, which is the structure, RACI, all that kind of stuff. But there's another great tool, set of tools. One is, close that, engaging meetings. So video 5, how to have better meetings, how to make use of all of these different aspects of meetings. You should review that. And then I think I'm in the wrong one here. Yep. So let's just do that. So roughly it's like videos 5 through 9. So I want you to review those, and I want you to get in the habit of having better meetings, because a lot of what you're talking about is answered in the protocols, tactics, techniques, and how you run a meeting in a specific way so that you get high levels of accountability. That's the first thing I'm going to have you look at. Then the next thing I want you to look at is, as I'm waiting here, it's going to be, all right, let's see here. Module 3. Site is slow today. Module 3, I want you to just be aware, especially of video 7. So this is all upgrading your management practice. We talk about the ARISE performance model. how to diagnose performance issues, how to do performance intervention, all that kind of fun stuff. But video 7 is all about the A in this arise. What do you call that thing? It's not a euphemism. It's a alliteration. Thank you. That's the A. That is your job. Your job is to make clear what people's responsibilities, priorities, and sequences should be. So that's your role. Now, the last tool I'm going to give you, so make sure you watch video 7 of module, 3? And then the last tool I'm going to give you is in module 5. Sorry, I'm taking the time. I can't remember the exact videos, so that's why I wanted to find these with you. Down here. Action planning hacks, video 9. So this is where I walk you through how to use the urgent and important matrix and the easy implement matrix, or easy impact is what it's called. Those are two different matrices that get you slightly different results. You can use them in different ways at different times, but they're designed to help you prioritize action. So the way I would think about this is, A, make sure you're having meetings that are weekly, that are run the way that I tell you to run them in those videos. It'll completely change the way accountability functions. You may look at those videos and go, I don't really need that, or I don't really need that. And that is possible. You may not need some of the things, but my recommendation is you start with more. And then as you go, you will start to optimize the meeting and learn, like, actually, that really doesn't help us here. But there's a reason why every single thing is recommended in there the way that it is. And if you want to go review it and then come back to me and be like, I'm not getting how that applies to my situation, no problem. Just let me know and we'll tailor it to your situation. When you get in those meetings, you might decide to use one of those action planning tools that you found that's in module 5. So I want you to review the action planning tools, because as a part of the meeting, you might pull out that tool, put it on a whiteboard or wherever, and start working that to establish those priorities and accountabilities. And then the last thing is, I just want you to watch that video on video 7, module 3, about making your team members awake, because you're ultimately the one who has to set those priorities, because you're the only one who has the vantage point to see far enough on the horizon to go, this matters more than that. And they're looking for you to do that.
I will do all of those things and report back. One last question. Is there something, whether it's Enneagram or the resources in your book, and I forget the test that we took, we all did it, you know, a few weeks back. 5
leadership languages.
Yeah.
Well, you have two. You have one quiz that's from this book, right?
Yeah.
The 7 management polarities quiz. And then you have the other one that doesn't have a book attached. And that's the 5 leadership languages. Both those are very useful in you triangulating who you're kind of dealing with. You know, I've already talked about the Enneagram can be very helpful. It's also easy to misuse. It's easy to misdiagnose, but still useful.
So again, if we're trying to crawl, and I want people to start thinking about, what am I good at? How do I communicate with this person? What is this person better at than me? As I work on this transition program, what would be the first step to start engaging my team?
I think it's really good for you guys to start by just mapping out. There are so many tools out there. I don't want to overwhelm you with too many tools.
Right.
And so, you know, a simple place to start is this, like having meetings where you discuss, where you map each other out. I've had teams where I will have them stand in a room together. And we'll just name the polarity. On this end is that polarity. On this end is this, doing and delegating. Go ahead and stand wherever you scored, you know, and then you start to see physically in the room where people live on the continuum. And you might start to realize, wow, oh my gosh, okay, 3 of these don't matter at all. But one of these polarities, everybody's over here and only one person is here. And it happens to be the person whose role is not matched to that side. So you start to go, oh, okay, we need like more of a doer in this role. We've got a bunch of delegators trying to do this role. And so that's how you start to you just need to start having conversations about, A, does it feel accurate? Does the test accurately reflect me? If it does, how? You know, just because I wrote it and it is true and these are patterns I can predict and see doesn't mean that I understand every nuance of how everybody feels about that experience. And so that's what the dialogue is about. You get to know each other a little bit more. The five leadership languages talks about how they're motivated. That's where you start to understand, how do I communicate with this person? So I've had people in teams where they will take the little icon, the symbol, in the five leadership languages that they have, that's either boundaries or connection or whatever, and they post it on their cubicle, outside their cubicle. So when people walk by, they know this person cares about, they like boundaries, they like this, they like that. And then you kind of know, like, oh, okay, I don't need to spend a lot of time talking to this person about their vacation, because one of their languages is boundaries. They just want to get to work. And so now I'm just going to jump in and be like, hey, can we get to work? And they're like, yeah. And they don't want to hear about my vacation, so let's just get to work. So those are little like tools that turn abstract concepts into things so that you have something to see. And I think that's sometimes the thing that's missing with those tools is people are like, I'm an ENTF or ENTJ or whatever. And nobody knows what that means. And nobody remembers it anyway. And so you end up with like, that's why StrengthsFinder is kind of useful, but also pretty shallow. And at the end of the day, there are like 35, I don't know how many strengths there are, but most people don't remember what they all mean anyway. They don't even know the definition. So it's not as easy to work in a team. Whereas I think the five leadership languages is a little more concrete. And I think the management polarities is a little more visual. That's why I designed them, because I wasn't happy with the tools that I was seeing. So I built new ones that reflect a lot of the challenges that I kept seeing in management contexts.
Okay.
And I think once you get some fluency with those tools and read the book and ask these kinds of questions and structure a dialogue and sit down with them and, you know, one-on-one and ask each person, like, hey, tell me about that leadership language. I see here you scored really high on these two and not very high on these. Does that resonate for you? And they're like, well, not really that one. I don't really care about those. Like, when people score really moderate, it means they don't have a strong preference. So you don't have to spend a lot of time on any of those. But if they score pretty high on one, you're like, hey, that seems pretty important to you. How do you experience that normally? You know, recognition is a great example. Like, hey, recognition is important, but how do you experience it? When does recognition really show up for you? So those are the different ways that I would start to get fluency. Once you've done that, start to notice if it's having any impact. And if it's not, let's talk, because they're meant to have an impact. They're meant to create change and develop new kinds of conversations and organizations that are more effective.
Sure. Yeah, it's good.
The other thing you're doing, Mitch, when you're doing all this, is you're creating culture. You're creating a culture, and then they have a shared language, and it's almost a secret language. So when people enter the organization, they need to remember, if you're going to use the secret language, you've got to have that as part of your onboarding. Everybody who comes on needs to take if it's a part of your dialogue. So for example, when I introduce the Enneagram into a company or into a senior leadership team, every new leader has to take the Enneagram and get a training in the Enneagram, because we're going to be sitting there going, oh yeah, well, I'm a nine, so blah, blah, blah. Well, that's a sixth thing to do, and nobody's going to know what that is. So if you're like, it's really more boundaries, or it's more doing, delegating, that's one of those polarities. And you're like, polarity, what's a polarity? What are you talking about? So you just need to know whatever you start to decide to do. And if it takes root, you just need to get used to saying, this is part of our onboarding. This is part of our shared language. And it's just as much where the bathroom is. It's how we talk about things that are important to us.
Okay. This is helpful. I'm committed to working on that this year.
Awesome. Okay. Well, you got a lot of homework. Let me know how it goes.
Awesome.
Good. Okay. Who else?
Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year.
So, the holidays have, as usual, created a backslide because everybody went away, and certainly our board went away and concentrated on the parties that they were having and all the things that were important. And then on Monday decided, oh my gosh, yes, I know we were away, but you must have done this, 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 and this. Well, actually, we sent you an email and asked for some feedback and we haven't had that. So do you think maybe we could get through that so that we know forward? One of the things that we've been doing here is my role is that person that's spinning lots and lots of plates. And we've decided that we're looking at where I best suit and where someone else can come on board. So a lot of that became a conversation, and we talk about sensitivity in titles and all of those things. The conversation for the board became about what that person was going to be called versus what they were actually going to do.
Well, yeah, that makes sense. Honestly, that is often the harder conversation to have. What is someone going to be called is actually a much harder conversation than the what's someone going to do. And the reason is because it taps deeply into the emotional system.
And for me, if I ever send any of you an email, it has my name and who I work for, and there is no title. Exactly. Because it's just so broad. My business card is the same way. But if you go into the community and someone introduces me, they have an opinion of what my, this is Susan, she runs, she does, yes. She's this. Not because of any title, just because of how you appear in the community. So as we get to a point now where, okay, we're going to bring someone on, the board sat in a room and developed that job description in a in a vacuum.
Yes. And what is the board doing developing job descriptions?
Exactly.
Okay. So that's problem number one.
So my other group that I attend is the how to manage your board and what they should be doing. And believe me, in a nonprofit that has experienced a huge amount of growth and where anyway, how can I help them to understand, here's what, because I provided them my list of roles. Here's what I do. Here's what I like doing. Here's what I know I'm good at doing. Here are the things that could be better serviced by someone else, which was great. It's a very, the industry is very small. It requires a lot of certification. It's dealing with individuals with disabilities. So you need to be able to handle people who have those issues. As you know, I work with horses, so you need to have some equestrian background and deal with all of that. When they developed the job description and sent it out, a director of operations.
Sent it out to where?
Put it up on Indeed and various other places.
Without you reviewing?
No, I actually had an opportunity to say, okay, looks good. Let's see how it works. And we've gotten people who see director of operations and that just automatically sends you a resume of someone who doesn't have any of the qualifications or is overqualified in a big corporate situation and doesn't understand the nonprofit world or how that works. And I'm just trying to figure my way into saying, look, they need to have some of these expertise, or am I wrong? And actually, operations could be broken down and they don't need to deal with the people or the fundamental,
I'm sorry to hear that.
Can someone who doesn't have a background come into a situation and learn enough in a short period of time to be valuable? is it good to not have that kind of background? Is it better to come in with skills and see opportunity?
Okay. I would say that I would never have a board writing a job description. And I wouldn't have approved if I had that. If I were in that role, I would have said, hey, this is great. Thanks for taking a crack at this. Here's what I'd like to do. I'd like to suggest that because I'm on the ground, I'm going to draft one for you guys to review.
Yeah.
And I would have just deconstructed the job description.
And that happened. That's sort of, we had this conversation before. Yeah, that's okay. Where it went.
So that's fine. I remember that. So is the issue that the job title is the problem, or what's the issue?
No, the issue is it's a very specific type of job that has, you know, you need to have certain certifications, you need to have a certain background, and the candidates that we're getting don't have that. So there is there's a need. They feel a need to fill the position without having the right person fill the position. So that's let's just, their, that's any their, warm body will do.
That's their position on it.
Yeah.
Okay. And you have authority to not do that?
Yeah.
That's a fairly simple answer, isn't it? I mean, I just want to make sure I'm understanding you. So what's the main question? I mean, I don't think it's a good idea for you to be putting anybody in that role that isn't going to be qualified. I mean, that's setting everybody up for failure. So what's the question that I'm not hearing?
So I have the ability to veto that, but right. I would like to be able to handle it in a way that they are in at least a majority of them or a percentage of them are in agreement versus no, we need to get it. Their idea is add more money, but the fact is that's not going to increase the qualifications. That only increases the responsibility of an already challenged nonprofit at this point, given that we have COVID coming back again, and that changes our ability to fund things.
Yeah. So in my mind, the way that I would have that conversation again, if I'm understanding you right, is I would simply say, hey, board, with your permission, I'd like to set up a different agreement about how we're going to fill this role. And here's what I'd like it to look like. I would like to take the ball on this. I'd like to be the quarterback or whatever metaphor works.
Yeah,
but I'd like to take the ball on this, and I would like to oversee the process. And I'd like to bring to you the most highly qualified candidates. And I'd like you to entrust me with the ability to execute everything that needs to be executed while we look for this role. So if the chief concern is to make sure that we have everything handled, I want you to know that I have everything handled. And I can do that for a period of time while we really look for the right person. If that changes, I'll make sure to come back and let you know. And if at any time you see that anything isn't being done the way it needs to, please let me know. And I'd like to free you guys from that responsibility, and I'd like to take that on. And so with your permission, let's proceed with that new agreement. How does that sound?
That sounds great. And okay. when the pushback comes,
yeah,
because it will.
Yeah.
How do you handle the pushback? I mean, because the pushback for the most part is the timing issue.
Yeah. So what do you mean by the pushback? Yeah. I mean, that's my main question is like, what are they pushing back on?
Oh, that it needs to happen, you know, sooner rather than later. And of course, in a sooner rather than later scenario, you get someone who may have great skills in one area and not in another. And then all that does is instead of taking things off of my plate, it adds things to my plate, because now I have to be a teacher at the same time in the areas where they aren't proficient.
Yeah. So the first question I would have with the board is, I share your urgency I'd like to get this role filled as quickly as possible. Tell me what your biggest concerns are that drive urgency for you. And then they can tell you, like, well, we're worried that this won't get done. We're worried that that won't happen. What else? Good. Tell me what else. You start taking notes. What are all the things that drive urgency in your mind, board?
Okay.
And you get all those list of things. And then you go, okay, number one, two, and three, I will take care of. If you know that I can handle this and I will take care of it, is that going to be okay with you? Number two, four and five, we can delay those. Those things can be delayed for 6 months. Six, seven, and eight, this one person on the team can take those on for the next 3 weeks. Or you might say, what I'd like to do with your permission is I'd like to take these 10 things and I'd like to go back for 1 week and think through how to solve for them in case we don't find someone as quickly as we would like.
Yeah.
So what you're doing there is you're managing a polarity again. You know, urgency and effectiveness is a polarity. You know, go fast and it may get done wrong.
Yeah.
And do it right and it may not get done in time and you've got a real problem on your hands. So that's a normal polarity. Yep. And just knowing that you're managing a polarity can ease some of that tension of that conversation. So what are the concerns? Let me show you how I've addressed all those urgency concerns. With your permission, I'd like to protract the timeline because I think it's unlikely we're going to get what we need.
Perfect. That's exactly what I needed. That's great, Shane. Thank you very much, as always.
Good. Awesome. Awesome. Who else?
I guess I'll share. Happy New Year to everybody. Thanks for getting together. So this is, I probably just need some help formulating and organizing my thoughts, Shane. So I'm going to kind of verbally dump on you and let you kind of sort it out for me. So, you know,
my favorite.
I know for sure that I'm, let's start here. You know, we had a great year. Everything's working really well. I think I mentioned a couple of sessions ago that, you know, people, knock on wood, are, you know, very, you know, happy and seem very efficient and so on and so forth. My personal struggle right now is I know that I'm extremely burnt out. You know, I was supposed to take some time off over the break and, you know, we had a big rush project come in and pulled me back in and, you know, I didn't get that separation. So I can only imagine that others are feeling similarly. So one question I had kind of for the group is, I know there's some tools out there, but is there one that rings really true with, and is there anything in the modules with dealing with burnout or measuring burnout and trying to ascertain that? Because I feel like we've been going at a million miles per hour, all of us, you know, throughout the organization, just because it's been, you know, we've been on the fortunate side of COVID to our business has been a massive uptick. And the market cycles have just created more and more opportunities and more work. So I guess that's the first question is, you know, burnout throughout the organization and managing that and ensuring that we're not succumb to, you know, some pending fallout, you know, due to just the overworking of people and keeping people motivated.
Yes. So, you know, a lot of the work that I did during the COVID crisis was with the Los Angeles Department of Transportation, who, you know, while everybody else was locked down, they couldn't be. And so they were, and the impact to their team was really substantial, considerable. Emotional impact. They were doing furloughs, all kinds of things. It was pretty rough. And a lot of what we did was just to introduce simple practices you can do for 5 minutes throughout the day instead of practices that you got to like leave for a week. Though that is necessary. You're going to need to get some separation and soon. There are these other little things you can do and they sound kind of strange, but I recommend them anyway. And so one, sometimes you can't do some of these because of the time of year, but like one of the ones that I recommend is literally you take 5 minutes, you go out and you find an area of the ground, you lay in the grass and you look at the sky. And that sounds kind of odd, but literally what you're doing is there is an electromagnetic in the
grounding.
Earth. That is scientifically removing certain things energetically from your body. And you don't have to do anything. You just have to receive that experience and just allow yourself to be held. And then looking at the sky is really helpful because it actually opens up the mind. So those are like really, you know, and I guess you're in Colorado or something, right? Where are you?
California. So we can do that year round.
Oh, so you can do that. Other people can't always do that. Yeah. But honestly, that's a really good technique, just to set an alarm every so often and just be like, no matter what you're in the middle of, just take 5 minutes, force yourself, go outside, lay down in the grass, look up at the sky, and just kind of let your mind go blank for a little while. Set an alarm for another 5 minutes, and then you come back in, and that's all it is. You do that a couple times in the day, if you can, if you can afford a couple times in the day. So that's one way. The other way is to do some guided meditation and breath work, which I'm going to take you through right now for a minute. Yep. So everybody can do this. I think everybody would benefit greatly from this experience. So what I'm going to have you do now is go ahead and turn your cameras off. And if you want, you can mute yourself. And the reason I have you turn your camera off and mute yourself, make sure that your door is closed. No one can disturb you, that you are on your own. And I ask you to turn your camera and mute yourself because it's possible for some people that it evokes and stirs emotions, and you may want to release some of those feelings without being, you know, observed in the process. You're welcome to be observed. That can also be powerful, but this is a nice, safe way to start. So I want you to put your feet on the floor, flat on the floor, and sit up straight, elongate your spine a little bit, close your eyes, and I want you to become aware of your breathing. And I don't want you to change your breath. Your breath happens automatically. You don't have to work at it. And I want you to notice the way that it just enters and leaves with ease. No effort is required. It comes and goes with no effort. And yet this thing that takes no effort is actually the source of everything in your life. You came into this world, and the first thing that everybody wanted to know about you wasn't your gender, but was whether you took a breath. And at the end of your life, the only way they will know whether you are here is if you're breathing. So between the first inhale and the last exhale is the pendulum swing of breath that constitutes your entire existence. It is something you cannot give to another, and you could not pay for. No amount of money could pay for another breath. And it is given free of charge as a gift. And you are owed nothing. You are not owed your next breath. No one owes it to you. It is just a pure gift. And so in this moment, reflect on the reality that even if you make a mistake, or you do something terrible, or you do something amazing, or you are incredibly generous, or whatever good or bad you do, this breath has no opinion about it. It has no opinion about your achievements, and it has no opinion about your failures. It does not withhold it or give more based on your behavior. It simply gives. This is the very definition of kindness and grace. It is not a spiritual trait. It is happening practically right now to you. And so as you're reflecting on that, I want you to take a nice deep breath in. Now I want you to actually inhale deeply, filling your whole body as if you're filling up a balloon with each inhale. And then a nice long exhale. And each time you're going to do this three times. Each time you inhale the fullness of your body, you're going to inhale and imagine that what you're inhaling is white, pure light into every single cell in your body. Filling up your body, lighting you up. And then when you exhale, you're going to push out black smoke. You're going to release anything and everything that you don't need, that's not serving you any stress, tension, anxiety, fear, judgment, criticism, all of it is going to be released. And I want you to do that 3 times at least. Exhale, black smoke. Inhaling white light. Exhaling black smoke. And wherever you are, just give me one more. And you can go ahead and open your eyes, come back to the present moment. Turn your camera off, unmute yourself if you want. Turn your camera back on, I should say, once you're ready. Take your time as you do it. Now, I didn't look at my clock, so I don't know how many minutes that was, but it can't have been very many. And I just want to check in. Colin, what did you notice? How do you feel now versus how you felt before you did that?
A little more subdued, a little more relaxed. Definitely not as tense or anxious. The black smoke analogy or visualization was quite powerful, and especially at the beginnings of probably the first 3 or 4 exhales, I felt like I was almost coughing. so it was pretty palatable from that standpoint.
Awesome.
I haven't kept up in my meditative practices as over the last few months, and most likely it was most needed. So that was quite a nice refresher. Thank you.
So my suggestion, anybody else want to comment on their experience? By the way, Michelle, welcome.
I enjoyed that. That was very very cleansing. I like the reminder of, your entire life is between your first breath and your last exhale. I love that. And I found myself thinking about everybody else who's in this building doing the same thing, like just breathing and being like, oh yeah, that's their life force. And I'm so lucky to be surrounded by these life forces. And it makes you want to, just like go up and give everybody a big hug before they leave today. So thanks for that.
Yeah. And for me, that takes place where I am every day, all day, and I never get to participate. So now I have a renewed understanding of that value.
Yeah. And especially true given the kind of work you do, Susan, is you're a service provider of those kinds of things, of well-being, bringing about well-being. And so it is good for you to connect to those things. So the reason I do these Elixirizes is, it took maybe 2 minutes. You could do everything I just said in 2, maybe 3 minutes. There's value in meditating for 20 minutes. Sure. I think it's great. If you can get around to it, go for it. But if you can't, a little something is a whole lot better than a lot of nothing. And I actually think that little saying, a little something is better than a lot of nothing, is one of the simplest ways to help us re-engage good habits in our life. Because we stop going, well, I didn't run 6 miles today, so I may as well not run any. And you're like, what if you walked half a mile? That's actually better than sitting. I only meditated for 2 minutes, way better than 0 minutes. It's okay that you didn't get 20 minutes in. So remember that a little something is better than a lot of nothing. And you're gonna see results in your life.
I think where I am right now in my life, that's my new mantra. A little something is better than a lot of nothing.
Yeah. Welcome, Michelle. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I apologize for being late. However, in my world, this is the craziest time of life. Everybody wants to know where their W-2 is, and no, they're not ready yet.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Absolutely. Got it. Good. Who else has something they want to share or talk about?
Anybody make any resolutions?
Same one I do every year, to read more.
Right now, my resolution has been the same for the past few years, which is just trying to be a better me and focus on getting through whatever it is I need to get through. That's why I'm here and work with other things. So I'm right there with you, which includes reading or listening. Actually, I can't. I'm not a good reader. I fall asleep. I listen to books.
So the way that I don't do resolutions, but I do something different. And it's something you can try on. And I'm not opposed to resolutions. I kind of goal setting and things like that. I found another way that I tend to prefer to operate. And what I do is I ask myself, okay, that first I list out the things I would want, which would be the beginnings of a resolution. Like, here's what a resolution might look like. So what do you want? More money, lose weight, whatever the thing is you think you want or need. And then I ask myself the question, what would it feel like if I had that thing? Because ultimately, that's what I'm really after. I'm not after the thing. I'm after the feeling the thing brings. Money doesn't bring me anything. It brings me a feeling. And the feeling might be freedom or choice. Weight loss doesn't bring me anything technically other than a feeling of confidence, well-being. So whatever those things are that we choose as our resolutions, what is the feeling you're after? Reading books, what is the feeling you're after to read books? It's achievement, or is it enlightenment, awareness, education? And so instead of linking concrete things to the feelings, I start with, how do I get the feeling? And then that leads me to, when have I had that feeling already in my life before? Because if I've had it once before, I can have it again. And in fact, if I close my eyes and visualize that moment in my life when I had that feeling is now active in this present moment, not in the past. And when that feeling is active in the present moment, I now become a beacon that attracts the things that match that feeling. So it's kind of like the reverse of how most people do resolutions. They start with, what things do I need to do to get that feeling? And instead, I want to figure out, how do I get the feeling without the things? Because the things automatically come once the feeling is stable. So that's what I tend to do. And it has worked beautifully. it's sort of like the breath meditation. It's effortless. There's no effort required. Things just naturally begin to unfold. Things that I couldn't have planned or orchestrated or been smart enough to figure out, or synchronicities and all kinds of things start to happen. So something to play with in addition to resolutions is just to ask yourself, what feeling do I want? When have I had that feeling? And then bring that feeling into this moment and hold it as long as you can.
Makes sense.
Yeah, very much into that. Like the, setting your intention is like just as simple as going, where do you want to go? And why do you want to go? I like the beginning of your first module of like the why, the how, like that, those three jobs and like that, like really, reignited a lot of like, cause I'm again, my story, second generation, there's two ways you can look at that is like, is this a burden that I'm like carrying across, or like, is this like a golden opportunity for me to be of service? And, that's, reframing my perception of things has really helped me bring like a new zest to what I do every day. And I feel really thankful for that. And if there's anything I'm trying to do in 2022 that I didn't do in 2021 is exactly remembering that, as well as I spent, I think that every time I've ever found myself to that burnout level that you were talking about, Colin, I often reflect on, what is it actually that brought me here? Is it this feeling of like, overwhelmed or things didn't go right? And then I just like, you know, try to accept, I just try to accept life on life's terms and like remember that like I only control the output, I don't control the outcome. And like that serenity for me has really opened up it's honestly just like made me more productive in the sense that I'm no longer feeling like, and again, this is an ebb and flow of every, you know, this is a day-to-day thing. But you know, when I shift my focus to the outcome, or excuse me, the output and not the outcome, the outcome is going to be on life's terms. Like I can only control what I put in. When I stay focused on things I can control and things I can't, or things I can control versus things I can, I ultimately, I feel more effective. My efficacy is ignited. So anyway, yeah, just thought I'd share that. Thanks for that.
Absolutely. I also love the word you use there, which is acceptance. I mean, I can't think of a more powerful thing for all of us to know and learn, which is when you learn to just accept things and not resist so much, it just doesn't hurt that bad. Lots of stuff goes away when we just learn to accept.
Acceptance. And I heard a parable recently about like, what's the most important part of the map? And everybody always says, oh, the compass, like, right, you got to be in the right orientation. It's like, no, it's where you are on that effing map, man. Yeah, exactly. So if you don't know where you are, you know, that's accepting, like, you know, not creating a delusion of, oh, I'm over here. No, you have to accept and appreciate like the reality of you're actually here. And then you can start moving on that map. So.
Right. That's a metaphor I use in my book, Cats Don't Bark. Actually, I start with that very thing that you are here. I went to Niagara Falls once and it was all misted over and they had a big map of the whole region and we were going to go figure out how to get to Niagara Falls and there was no you are here dot. So I was like, cool. I have no idea where this map is. So that's how I started my
very good.
Does anybody else struggle with as I formulated in my head, a trap of either stagnation or trap of status quo? And maybe this is part of, some of the burnout that I'm feeling. I always leave these calls feeling invigorated and motivated and wanting to, tackle some new things or different things. And then, the workload or so forth, comes into reality. And a lot of the stuff that I had aspirations to get done, didn't get done. Or, I find myself falling back into, just doing the work and doing the same thing that I've done for the last, 10, 15 years. And, it's productive. It's contributory to the organization and to our purpose and to our why. But, I find this kind of this struggle, I guess, with, continued growth and, just doing the status quo because it's been doing so well and benefiting so many. So I guess that's kind of a rambling way to say that, I find that this trap of status quo is kind of, a comfortable area for me and would like to push out of that if possible.
Yeah, are you talking more about just your own contribution and your own joy and happiness, or are you talking about something else?
Yeah, I would say it's more personally rooted. I would say that I am in a projected transition from a role that I've been in. You guys know my story a bit about the organization and its acquisition and so forth, and I think I'm pretty ready to do something different. I don't really know what that something is. I've got a couple more years to try and to continue to, build the people around me and, successfully hand off my roles to various people. But I guess I find myself saying, okay, well, am I just going to hold on for dear life for the next 2 years or, this is really an opportunity to capitalize and to help other people And you know, it's kind of, you know, that balance of, well, I don't know where I'm going to go at this point in time, with, you know, what am I going to do for the next couple of years? I guess it's, yeah, again, rambling thoughts for you, Shane.
Are you able to do your job at 70%, or is your job overwhelming?
My job's pretty much 110%.
Okay. So it's not like you're sitting there bored and you're not sure how to spend your time. It's you're getting cashed out. You're getting tired.
Yes.
My strongest recommendation for you is to take a week off and don't think about anything and just have a good time and let the ground lie fallow. You know, that metaphor of farm, you know, you've just been planting too many seeds for you to see straight right now.
Yeah.
And so for sure, make it a priority. I don't care, you know, before the end of this month, come hell or high water, get yourself a week off. If you can get away from physical space that you're in, go do something you really enjoy with the people you really love, and try that on. And then we can talk.
Okay.
You don't need to do more. You need to have a break.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet.
I could say something too, Colin, because I also feel like I'm 110% in my job. You know, there's never, and the pile just keeps getting bigger, and you know, it's eventually you feel like you're gonna, like, you know, just get overcome by it. And a lot of what I'll do, and it's because like Shane said, there's only so many hours, and you can only do so much. But I like to try to like kind of test that line of, you know, people, basically we're just constantly managing like what people are expecting us to do. Like for me, like it's, you know, my employees are expecting me to do this. My staff, or excuse me, my customers are expecting me to do this, my vendors. So, okay. Those expectations are constantly being, you know, thrown at me, but like how I will I just stay in communication of say, hey, I didn't get to that. And then, for some reason, like me just staying in communication and not disappearing on people, like helps me feel so much freedom. And they're like, yeah, I get it. Like, I know you guys are so slammed right now or something, like that, staying in communication. And even if you're ever in a position where you can delegate that, it's like, I try to I'll try and throw somebody on an email and say, hey, like, you know, I'm pretty, you know, I'm not gonna be able to get this back to you when you need it, but so and so is gonna like stay in touch with you. I don't know if that's in your ability, but yeah, that staying in communication is, like, to me, I think Shane uses it as like monkeys. Like, so you're getting those monkeys off your back is like, sure, you know, that monkey can be riled down if you just kind of throw him a little snack of like, you know, hey man, like I'm going to, like, so that way you don't get that second and third, like, hey, it's like the second or third time I requested this thing from you. I mean, that's me all day long, man. So I always try to test that line of like, how long can I stave this person off? So then the next time they come to me and say, I need this by the end of the day, rah, 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 I can say, oh, hold on. I'm like, you know, I reset that expectation of like what's possible for you. So
thank you, Dave. The expectation management part of it's just so powerful, and the day-to-day piece, I think, is something that, you know, is pretty well managed, and I got a very competent and amazing team. It's, you know, kind of setting those, you know, larger things, longer term things, and, you know, those more promising projects, so to speak, that are, you know, adding to some of the weight. But I think, you know, taking some time to separate and just decompress is really so that I can gain some clarity in those areas and plot a better course to reach those, you know, those next, you know, year or 2 year kind of objectives is really going to be helpful.
Yeah, and Colin, I'll have lots of more thoughts once you've had a chance to get away. You know, right now I'm just aware of the first step for you is just take a break.
Yeah.
And then we can engage more active practices to help you with what you're up against. Got 10 more minutes. Anybody else want to share, ask questions, talk?
I had one thing going back to that, because knowing that I'm on a pretty short timeline for getting these this reorg going, because I really feel like it's necessary. And you helped me so much with, like, just straight up saying, like, dude, you're in your busiest time of year, no better time to tackle this right now, because now all these, like, glaring issues and, you know, competing you know, mindsets. My I think I'm like getting almost like you just want to, like, shake people and like, so I'm trying to, like, all right, like, what are some methods to just, like, dial it back and, like, trust the process and let it happen? Because even with, like, a perfect example is I was planning to have a meeting with our guy who's currently our showroom manager, moving him into this technical director position. It's gonna be a huge lifestyle change for him. Great quality of life improvement. You know, he won't, you know, he's, you know, we ask him to do too much right now. I need him to do more of what he's great at. And, like, and I'm trying to have this conversation with him, but he's like, he's literally out with COVID right now. And now I'm like, oh man, like, I want to get this done. And then I have, I'm going to Switzerland, you know, visit my brother-in-law on Tuesday. And I got a COVID test this morning. I sound like I'm getting sick, and I'm just all this stuff going on. And I just, like I said, I just want to kind of, like, get everybody together and just, like, shake them and be like, all right, this is now the new thing. Go. Like, cause I feel like I'm losing time, but it's like, how do I, like, all right, let's just reel this back, and, like, maybe don't try to jam this change. Yeah. Like, you know, just how can I schedule that out in a realistic way? That's like, okay. Like, maybe, like, a simple question to you guys would be like, what, and I think that Susan, like, you'd be a perfect person to ask this question to, is like, what kind of like buy-in, and like, and also, like, what kind of timeline should I expect from, you know, my staff to be like, okay, I'm introducing this idea, which is where we're at now. Now we're actually, like, getting together, having these meetings, you know, what are our core values? What are the principles for each, like, you know, role, and then as we, like, go, we're going to, you know, go on this hiring spree, you know, like, what is that, like, you know, like week to week, month to month, like, how do people still feel like they're not being, like, pushed over the edge? And, you know,
where are you right now in the process?
I'm still staging the ascent. I'm trying to get everybody kind of excited. I feel like I've done that with everyone other than this guy who's not yet returned to work, off on vacation.
Just so I understand, what is it you've done? When you say you're staging the ascent, I don't know where you are. Are you at awareness? Are you at understanding? Where are you on the camps?
Oh, all right. So definitely, like, there's an awareness across the board other than this guy who's on vacation and now has COVID. As far as what's the next one?
Understanding.
That's so, understanding is like, I'm trying to put these meetings on the calendar and they just keep getting pushed off and pushed off. That's where I feel like that understanding is going to happen. You know?
So when you say meetings on the calendar, are you meeting one-on-one with individuals who are going to be affected, or are you meeting as a group? What do you mean?
One-on-one to start, and then as a group to really, like, all right, I'm looking for everybody's enrollment, and now here we're going to all walk and we're going to ascend this mountain together.
Good. So you've done all the one-on-one meetings where you said, this is what your role is going to be, this is what you're going to look like, this is what I'm going to expect of you, right?
Yes.
Everybody's gone, okay, got it, I hear you. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Other than this dude. Yeah. One of five. Yeah.
Great. So then the next meeting is, hey, everybody, we've all gotten together. Here's the new org chart. Here are the roles and responsibilities. Basically, the presentation you just showed me, you're going to show them, right?
Right.
And then as far as I'm concerned, it's effective that day. You just say.
So there's no, like, you know, like, easing into it. It's like,
no,
a couple pencil processes.
What you do is you go, today is the day all of this begins. I hereby declare you all these titles. These are all your accountabilities. If you have questions, come back. In 3 months, we're going to revisit this and see how it's going.
But then have our tactical meetings in between now and then.
Yeah. You're going to start all the things that you want to do, but then you're going to do it in 3 months, and you're going to set it on the calendar. You're going to mark a date, and you're going to have an hour and a half time block that's a strategy session where you go, hey, I sent you all out into the world with these expectations, this understanding. In 3 months, we're going to figure out how's this working. Is it working pretty well, or do we need to adjust some things? That's how you do that change management. So you don't have to wait a long time. As long as you can get, you know, people on the calendar, you don't have to wait too long. And you know what? You can even, it's hard with that one guy to have him behind, but you almost have to send him an email or something and say, we're undergoing a reorganization. I'm unfortunately, I can't delay this until you're back. We do need to move forward. There's too many things happening, but I wanted you to be alert to it. And I'm ready to have a conversation anytime you are. There's no rush for you to come back. We know you need to get better, but just know that things are going to be different when you come back, different roles. I've been able to talk to everybody. So just flag it for him and then go ahead and put the meeting on the calendar, and hopefully he'll be better by the time that meeting happens, you know?
Right. Yeah. So just at least set that benchmark, and it makes me feel good knowing that it is okay to just say, hey, like we've all like talked about this. Mm-hmm. However, like this is it today, starts now. And
yep, yeah. Absolutely. If they know what their job description is, they know what their job title is, they know what their compensation is, if they're a change, if they understand all those implications on that day, there's no reason not to start them on that day. Yeah. And you had asked Susan, so I want to make sure Susan has a chance to weigh in. Susan, did you want to respond?
Absolutely. And I think the other thing is, look, COVID is from here to here. So you might send an email and say, hey, how are you feeling? Is there an opportunity for us to have a Zoom meeting where you can have that conversation with him and he can join even the group meeting? You set the computer on the side and do that from that standpoint. And I think the other point to that goes back to what Shane shared with me earlier in this meeting is, look, you're going off and you have to make that determination if it's urgency or efficacy that you're really looking for. So, you know, finding that right point along the way is like a week later, really, is perfection there, or is perfection something that isn't really, it's overrated? Because look, when you're trying to run a place and your standards are here and you've got so many A's and so many B's and so many C's, look, every place needs everything. So knowing that the team requires all of those skills is important, and perfection is sometimes overrated.
And by the way, nobody who has COVID is expecting everybody else to wait around for them. You know, everybody gets sick. They're like, well, who knows what's going to happen? I'm going to come back and it's going to be a different world.
And who knows what we're supposed to do? Is it 5 days? Is it 10 days? Is it until, yeah. I mean, who knows?
So go with that. The other thing I just want to flag for you, Dave, is once you do this, just set the expectation. You're going to say, hey, for the next 3 months, we're going to figure out how to do this together. And if things aren't working right, it's just because we've all got old habits, including me. Yeah. And so I'm going to try to do a good job. I hope you guys are going to try to do a good job. And in 3 months, we're going to hold hands and say, yep, it's working, or we need to dial something in. But that way, there's a kind of an experimental phase that even you as the leader are going to have to learn how to be like, oh, you're not supposed to talk to me. And if you do, you need to loop him in. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of like, oh, okay, I need to not do that, because the whole point of this structure is for me to not do more. I should do less now. And that is a really good test for you, is after 3 months, if this thing is running and most of the people are doing what they're saying and you aren't breathing more, we need to revisit it.
Right.
You've got the outcome. One of the biggest outcomes of this is Dave is happier and thinking bigger thoughts and looking out further over the horizon and not overwhelmed. It doesn't have to be that way. You don't have to be overwhelmed. Your life can be really good.
And I think a part of that is the courage to have the conversation when you think something isn't going exactly the way you'd like, and the grace to step back and understand that people are going to make mistakes along the way, and that's okay. That's the process.
And that's why the 3 months is helpful to name, because you're saying, we're all going to be learning over the next 3 months. And then at the end of 3 months, we're going to be holding each other accountable at a new level.
Yeah.
So there is a moment where it's like, oh, mistakes are made. We're learning. But that only goes for so far.
Yeah.
And so what that does is it de-escalates emotions because the expectations are set. Like, this is our new life together. And everybody gets pissed off because it doesn't work the way they think. That's how you de-escalate the anger, is to say in 3 months, we're going to fix it. We're going to cure it in stone. And then after that, we're not going to revisit for a year or 6 months or whatever. But then we're going to be held accountable to how we behave. Whereas in the first 3 months, accountability is going to be a little softer while we learn.
Yeah. And you're defining the dog. So if you ask everybody to draw a picture of a dog, they'll all have a different picture. So part of what you're doing is designing the dog, and your way of what it looks like is going to be completely different until you have these conversations.
I like that. Yeah, I like that idea of, you know, what's in my vision is, you know, it's only between my ears until we all know, like, you know, like we all put our version of the dog, overlay them, and then fill in those lines between them. You know, that's a great thought. Thank you.
We are learning, Shane. You're teaching us.
Teaching me too. I learned too. I love this. So much fun. Well, I think we're at the end of our time, everybody. Thank you so much for coming on. We'll look forward to seeing you next week.
Perfect.
Thanks, everybody.
Appreciate it, everybody. Have a good week.
Thank you so much, guys. All right.
Are you gone next week then? We won't see you next week.
Yeah, I was going to send you a message on that. I don't think I'll be able to join. We'll see. But if not, I'll just pick up on the next week.
Sounds good, man. Good luck.
Got it, bro.
Good luck, everybody. All right, guys. Have a good week.
Take care.
See ya.
Bye.